This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. A busy day, a busy week, and a lot going on to talk about. Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Always a pleasure to be here, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
So about 14 days ago, I guess it would be, the board issued a proclamation in opposition to Senate Bill 1530, the cap and trade bill. How often do boards of commissioners make statements on potential legislation?
It just depends, Kyle. We've certainly done it in the past. It really is something that we sort of reserve the right to use on certain things that are going to have a significant impact to the people that we represent.
And what led you as a group to take the step?
So we've been following this cap and trade regulations or legislation since, probably long before the beginning of the last legislative session. Really trying to understand it and what it means for rural Oregonians and specifically folks in Douglas County. And the bottom line is we don't feel like it's good for the people of rural Oregon that we represent. And so you'll notice the proclamation was signed by me. That's only because my fellow commissioners had voted delegated authority to me to sign issues related to this particular legislation, because we wanted it to be timely, and some of them were going to be traveling. So we just wanted to make sure that we had the ability to get this done in a timely fashion. It certainly represents the feelings of the entire board, but we just understand that the impacts that this thing's going to make on the citizens of Douglas County, and for what it's going to accomplish versus what it's going to cost. In other words, the cost-benefit analysis on this particular piece of legislation isn't there. We feel like there's a lot bigger things or better things that we could do to make a more significant impact for a lot less cost.
So when the proclamation was issued, it obviously went out to the media. Where else did it go?
We sent it to our legislators in Salem to make sure that they knew where we stood. We sent it around to a few other counties who were interested in doing this as well. So they had either sent copies of theirs and asked counties to consider getting on board. I imagine it probably got sent to the Association of ONC or the AOC as well, Association of Oregon Counties.
Now, as you have looked at the legislation, talk about what you think are its effects, maybe some of the implications if it goes through.
Yeah, so the bottom line is the effects are going to be higher prices for people on goods and services. And, it's essentially a tax on fuel and energy. And when the costs of fuel and energy go up, the cost of everything else goes up. One thing I want to make perfectly clear, I followed this very closely, including watching the meeting, the Joint Ways and Means Committee meeting earlier this week. Even before that, nobody that I've talked to that's involved in this in any way is against controlling greenhouse gas emissions. Everyone's concerned about global warming. Everyone's concerned about our carbon footprint. Everyone that I've talked to wants to do the best they can in managing that. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to this is just the fact that we're not getting much for what the cost is, and that there's much better approaches out there to be used.
Now, you mentioned sending this out to some of the other counties. I understand quite a few county commissions have put out something similar in some form recently.
Yeah, I think that there's 26 counties that have put out proclamations by their entire boards. And then there's some counties beyond that where individual commissioners couldn't get a consensus in their boards and sent out individual proclamations. But I think there's at least 26, maybe 27 full counties opposed to the legislation.
Now, while that is the majority of the counties, of course, as we all know, most of the population, over half of the population, is centered north of Eugene and in counties that probably aren't on that list.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that frustrates me. I think just conceptually, when you think about representative forms of government, and we've seen it in this state before, I think a co-governance model is the best, where you have equal representation between Republicans and Democrats in the House and the Senate. And we've been there in Oregon before. And I would go back to and think that those were probably the best years of governance for the people and by the people that we've seen in the history of the state. But for example, you know, I was talking to Melissa Cribbins. She's a county commissioner from Coos County the other day, who's interested in running for Arnie Roblin's Senate seat. And I asked her, where does the district go? Well, she lives on the south coast in Coos Bay, and the district goes all the way up into Sherwood, which is a suburb of Portland. You know, and that's really an example of why we have this imbalance in government at the state level, because the way the districts have been drawn to get, to pull enough of those Democrat votes into each district to get Democrat representation, I think it has created a real unfair balance in the state legislature for rural Oregon. And we've got people that don't live our lifestyle or are not affected by the things that affect us making the decisions just based on pure population amounts in those Senate districts.
You mentioned the time when there was more equal representation, and you mentioned Arnie Roblin, which made me think about that period of time where we had a co-speakership, if I remember correctly, between Arnie Roblin, kind of a moderate to progressive Democrat, and Bruce Hanna, a conservative to moderate Republican. And that was sort of a unique time.
It was a unique time in the history. If I remember correctly, there was an even split in the House and the Senate, and which was fantastic, and co-governance in both houses. And we certainly had an equal voice for people across the state in that governance model. And I think Oregon really would be well served to try to move back to a model similar to that when we look at redistricting again.
Now, this is really another one of those urban versus rural divide moments, it seems like.
It absolutely is, and it really accentuates what we've been talking about for many, many years. I mean, we talk about all kinds of things where the urban vote has sort of squashed the rural voice, and, you know, simple things like, being able to hunt cougars with dogs, for example. That has a different impact on folks in Douglas County, livestock owners and managers, than it certainly does on people in the metro areas. And this legislation is absolutely no different. You know, when you talk about an increase in fuel cost, the average person in rural Oregon drives far more miles and consumes far more fuel than someone who may live in a metro area. It has a significant impact on us, and we typically generally see lower average household incomes here. So it's a double whammy when you've got folks who tend to make less money but are being impacted at a higher level because of this regulation.
Now, all but two members of the GOP, one in each chamber, have left the state over the issue. What's your comment on what's happening or not happening in Salem?
Well, I applaud the Republicans for leaving. I mean, you hear this being some sort of a controversy where some people say, you know, they're getting paid to show up there and do the work, and the other folks say by leaving they are doing the work, and I put myself in that camp. And it's obviously a tool that's available to those folks when they're in Salem that the Democrats and the Republicans have both used in the past. I think it's really unfortunate when either party gets down to their last tool being withholding a majority or a quorum, because in my opinion, good legislation has equal representation. You've got support from Republicans and Democrats when legislation is passed. This particular piece of legislation had no support from any Republican, and it had opposition from Democrats. So in my mind, it's bad legislation. It should have never got to this point. I saw many attempts for them to try to have a conversation and compromise, which is what politics is really all about. And there really just wasn't any interest in compromise by the majority party, in my opinion. And I applaud the Republicans for walking out.
So if this somehow goes forward, which is unclear given the stalemate at this point, and were enacted either by the legislature or if it went to the voters and was approved at a later date, possibly this fall, what are some of the everyday implications for people in Douglas County?
Well, you made a really good point, Kyle, and I'm going to just address that for a second. When the major point of contention and the ask is simply to allow the voters to weigh in, that was one amendment that was shot down in the Joint Ways and Means Committee the other day, and I could not believe it. I mean, we live in a in an environment where we're governed by the people's voice and their ability to vote. And when the Republicans are simply asking for an opportunity for the people of the state of Oregon to weigh in on this issue on the ballot, and that is denied, in my mind, it's a sad day in government. And I hope it does go to the ballot. I hope that they have the opportunity to put it on the ballot, give people the opportunity to dig through it, look through it, understand it, debate it, cast their vote, and then go from there.
And it's been this is really kind of the continuation of what we dealt with last session that led to the walkout then as well. Some have said it's so complex, a piece of legislation, that it's hard for lawmakers to understand, let alone the average voter. How would you respond to that?
Well, I don't know. It's a double-edged sword. There's certainly people out there that don't do their homework before they vote, but at the end of the day, this is important legislation. The people of the state of Oregon have absolutely voiced their concern about this particular piece of legislation. They've taken time out of their work days. They've taken hits on their paychecks to take time out of their work days to go up and protest against this thing. I have a really hard time believing that the folks aren't going to read through this and understand it before they cast their vote. And I think it's critical. And I'll tell you, I understand. We went through a difficult process here of implementing fees at the landfill. If we would have simply just gone out and asked the voters of Douglas County if they wanted to pay more fees, the answer would have been an overwhelming no. And I understand that. But if we had an opportunity to give them all the information and the DEQ regulations and the financial assurance and all those things that had to be addressed, when they look at the situation the same way and have the opportunity to see it all, they're going to understand the need. And I think this is no different.
And so what do you think should be done instead of this bill to address some of the issues it's covering?
Well, the first thing is, you got to take a look at where we are and what we're trying to accomplish. So, and this is some information that came from some people within the state of Oregon who do this work for a living. The Global Warming Commission, for example, says that Oregon produces 0.14% of carbon out of the world. We're talking about 0.14%. We've already in Oregon made significant improvements. And when you look at this from a per capita basis, so in other words, how much carbon are we emitting per person that lives in Oregon? And you go back to, the start date of this conversation was in 1990. We've seen over a 21% reduction in carbon emissions per capita in the state of Oregon. We are already doing some significant things to improve the situation here, but it's a global problem. We can't tax Oregonians to death to affect a minuscule change when it's a global problem. We have to focus on what's going on globally. We have to talk to our global partners and get some movement from them. And we can't carry the whole burden of this ourselves when at the end of the day, we make no impact.
Going to take a break. Back with more on Inside Douglas County in just a moment on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1251, News Radio 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson talks Oregon at 1. On tomorrow's program, State Representative Gary Leaf, one of the lawmakers who've left Salem, left the state over the cap and trade issue, will be joining us from wherever he might be as we continue the conversation with area lawmakers and getting the perspective of County Commissioner Chris Boyce. On today's program, I want to ask you about a few other things in the county, but first, anything else you want to mention about this cap and trade bill and the proclamation?
Well, I don't think there's really any more talking about this, Kyle. It's pretty simple. I mean, we got to have our representatives in Salem come to the table and find some sort of compromise, and we should have bicameral, bipartisan support on any legislation that's passed up there, in my opinion. And until we get that, it's a problem. But as a side note, it's unfortunate that we've stopped absolutely everything else in Salem that should be happening. And I'll give you just a small example. There's a little church out in Umpqua that wants to build a parsonage and it inside the walls of the church building, and it requires an amendment to the state land use laws in order to accomplish that, and that amendment has to happen in Salem, and we hope to have somebody work on that, and there's nobody doing anything in Salem right now, so there's people being affected by this in a whole bunch of other ways. I personally believe that passing this size of legislation during the short session is not what the short session was ever intended for. I think budget adjustments and legislative fixes should be the focus of the short session, and I hope they'll get back to that.
What about county issues, other things facing the county? Where's the county budget process at for the coming fiscal year?
So we're going to start having our actual budget meetings with the departments coming next week. We sent out budget directions earlier in the year. The departments have been busy preparing their propositions for the next year's budget. Those budget hearings where we meet with the departments, we call them workshops, actually is the right word. Those budget workshops where we meet with the individual departments, again, start up very soon. That's where we look at their proposals, where they were last year, what they're proposing to need for the coming year, and we start to get to ask questions about budget impacts and things. So we'll get through that in March, and we'll be working back and forth on that for a month or so. And again, we'll pass the budget prior to the beginning of the next fiscal year, which starts on July 1.
So with these getting started, then have you already kind of set out sort of guidance as to what you're looking from departments?
We are, and there's not really any significant changes this year. Fortunately for us, we've done a pretty good job of curbing spending and working on the revenue side of the equation. We know that we're going to, for example, I think at the end of last fiscal year, we actually put a little bit of money back into reserve, so we're not sort of at the same dire level of emergency that we have been. We patched a lot of, a lot of leaks, solid waste and parks, and some of those other ones have all been fixed. So there's no real significant changes for the coming year. Nothing that should be alarming to anybody for the most part.
What about county departments and maybe things going on now that you want to highlight?
Well, I think I just mentioned two, the two that I'm the most proud of, and there's a lot of great things happening throughout the county, but, is the parks and solid waste, and it's one of those where we had, solid waste, we were spending $4.5 to $6 million a year just operating that facility, and it's now back in the black, and we've made some significant improvements in compliance with DEQ regulations, both in for leachate and for air quality. We continue to do those. We've got a great plan moving forward. The state of the system's healthy. I think we're going to be able to keep all the transfer stations open. We've been reviewing the recommendations from the Solid Waste Advisory Committee, and those were a little scary, and the public was scared by those, but I think what the commissioners are going to be able to do with it is going to be far more favorable than what the committee suggested, and at least that's my hope. The Parks Department's doing great. I mean, if you look around, we've had significant improvements throughout the park system. New boat ramps, new restroom facilities, new playground facilities. We've got paving over at the Windy Cove A&B over in the coast, and it's just beautiful. I mean, the parks over at the coast are coming together with a joint theme sort of around the lighthouse. The paint scheme over there matches the lighthouse. The pedestals in the Windy Cove that just got replaced match the lighthouse. The Umpqua Dunes is generating far more revenue. Of course, we built our revenue model fairly conservatively, but it's exceeded our expectations. We're in the middle of the second phase of the remodel of that facility. Right now, there's ground being broke at the coast on two different projects. The Umpqua Dunes RV Resort Phase 2 remodel is going on one side of the road, and on the other side of the road, we have a 40-unit expansion happening at the Winchester Bay RV Resort, which is going to be great. It's going to increase revenues into Winchester Bay and Salmon Harbor. That'll be much needed for further dredging, dock repairs, and all the things that are needed over there. And folks who call us often and say, I can't ever get in over there, we'll have 40 more spaces to choose from. So hopefully people that have wanted the opportunity to go and enjoy that facility in the past that have struggled to be able to get in there will now have an opportunity to get in. So it's going to be great.
Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.